Coach, defense is important, but a team also has to score to win. You can have the best defense in the world, but without an offense to match, you won't be winning any championships. Just have a look at what happened during March Madness this year. Three out of four teams that made it to the Final Four on both the women's and men's side were the top three offensive-ranked teams. That's no coincidence. The reality is most coaches will win more games with a 15% improvement on offense. But how? We're bringing in one of the greatest offensive minds in the game and Read and React creator, Coach Rick Torbett, to help answer that question. On May 9th, Rick and I will kick off our four-week offensive strategies track where we will teach coaches how to score 7 to 10 more points per game. Just head to pgccoaching.com/tracks to learn more.
Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. This week, TJ and Sam discuss what makes offensive actions work, including how to utilize different types of screens, combining actions together, personnel implications, and how you might steal actions from other teams based on what's hard to guard. Let's get started.
Welcome back to the Hardwood Hustle. TJ and I here today. And TJ, excited about this conversation. We're going to talk and jump right into it. We're going to talk about offensive actions and are they hard to guard or easy to guard? We might have a little banter, a little back and forth on it. Me and you might fall on different sides. So let's jump into it. The first one, TJ, we talked a little bit pre-show, but we wanted to save this conversation, just record and go. But it's the flare screen. You know, I do like the flare screen, and I like it because it is not as it doesn't get run as much. Therefore, I don't know that teams prepare to guard against it as much. And because of that, it can be hard to guard. I also like it, obviously, for, you know, you need a three or want to get one of your good shooters an open look. And that flare action can be hard to guard, like I said, and then the slip action out of it too with the screener slip into the basket. What are your thoughts on flare screens?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think all of this, the actions you run are age stage. I think they're amount of time that you have to put into them. And I also think, you know, personnel plays a part in it. And, you know, I've faced a ton of different actions over the course of my career, just like you have, Sam. And I think that the one thing that's the caveat here is like a well-coached team that runs their action well is typically hard to guard no matter what it is. You know what I mean? Like if they face dribble drive teams, you know, motion teams, you know, screening motion teams, like all kinds of different offenses. And really, almost all of the actions to me boil down to your execution. Like how good are you at the pace in which you run them, the timing of what you run them, and then do you have the time to invest to make them good? You know, so for instance, I think the flare screen is good when it's invested in. You know, I think it's good when you take care of the little details, like they set it up well. You have guards that can shoot out of that footwork. You have post players or screeners that slip really well. The length of the pass is something I don't always love in flare screens, right? Like if you flare somebody out and you're throwing the pass 20 feet or 25 feet, there's just a lot of recovery time on the flare screen. And so I've seen that, you know, be picked off. I've seen it be ineffective because of the length of the time the ball's in the air. And I've also seen teams run it really well where it's, hey, they know what they're running and they get to the quick flare. Here's where, you know, if it's a part of your set where you've really worked on the execution of it, I think it can be hard to guard. When teams randomly run flares, there's a lot of things that have to be on the same page. You know, is the ball moving towards the flare so it shortens the length of the pass? Is the player's footwork proper to be able to get the feet underneath them to get the shot off? Like, I think all of those things matter. So to me, like most of these are going to come down to execution. But when executed well, it's a tough action to guard. When it's one of 10 actions that you run moderately well or average or below, then I don't think it's that hard to guard. And I think how you guard also affects whether it's effective or not. So, you know, teams that switch a lot, you know, if you have a great slip man and a great reader of the pass, it can be tougher to guard. If the slip's not really good and the passer's not great, it's easy to guard.
Yeah, and I think what I like, let's talk specifically about the flare screen. So when you set that flare screen, TJ, depending if you teach your players what to do on depending on what the defense. So let's say it's a non-switch and you teach it well. Well, if you get a clean hit, you are truly flaring out. If you get a guy chasing over the top, you can sometimes get that curl action all the way to the rim and get layups off of it. Or when they fight underneath it, you're just essentially popping back. But those are the nuances you have to teach your guys how to read, or your girls how to read. You know, back to your point on personnel, you know, my last couple of years coaching in college, our best two players were the five man and kind of this, we had a combo guard. He could play really all three guard positions, but we would run flare screen action to an open set clear out, right? So like a handoff, imagine handing off into the wing, the right wing. We would then raise up that five to back screen the one and send them over and put three on the weak side. Then we would, on the, as the two came a handoff, hopefully people are following me verbally here, as you dribble up into the middle third and pass it across the midline, then that five is coming in to set another flare screen, but we have a two-man game. So if we catch it on the flare for a shot, or the five rolls into the post and we feed the post and we can do different things. So for us, you know, it was very effective for that reason. I like it more as a set play, less as like a action or a principle within a motion offense. I think it's a little bit harder to bring to life.
Yeah, and I don't want to go too deep on this, but I think there is some little nuances that are important for coaches to hear in this. So like, particularly like what you're talking about, Sam. So you are, if you think about all the things that are going into, like you said, you run in it as a set play. So you have balanced the floor in your set play. So you've cleared a side out. You know what I mean? That's one thing. You've also been really intentional about where the ball needs to go. So you're trying to hit the flare, which eliminates the read a lot for the player passing the ball, which makes it simpler. And now it comes down to the execution of two players. And so anytime you run a lot of screens, I think you need to be aware of this as a coach. You have to spend a lot of time teaching it. I'm not saying it's wrong. I actually think teams that have a bunch of screens are the hardest teams to guard if they're really good at it. I also think they're the easiest teams to guard if they're not really good at it. If it's a bunch of random screens, because just by chance, their timing is going to be off. Just by chance, they're not going to look the right direction when that screen is happening. Just by chance, a lot of things can happen. But when it's super intentional and you've balanced the floor for them, you've eliminated the passer's read, and now it just comes down to the execution of the flare screen, I think it's more effective. Now, again, going back to before, like a team that can just randomly run those actions but are really good at it, they've spent a lot of time on it because there's so many things that have to go right. The passer's got to be really good at reading, the timing of the screen, the reading of the screen, you know, all that kind of stuff. Again, those teams that have spent a ton of time on it, they are really hard to guard. But at the same time, they have invested a lot of time in there. And so you have to be conscious of, I think a lot of people have gone away from that a little bit, like just general motion where there's a lot of screening simply because the investment of time is so large.
Yeah, that's a good point. I agree with you because kids are more skilled today than ever. They know how to create advantages off the dribble, right? I would say that at every level of basketball, kids can go create a shot or create an advantage for themselves better than ever before. And because of that, TJ, to your point, you know, you see a lot of space and play offenses at every level because of that ability and the skill level being so high. And it does take quite an investment when you're setting a lot of screens. The art of setting a screen, the art of using a screen, the skill of making a on-time, on-target pass coming off a screen, like all those things have to go well. It's kind of like football where, you know, I think what Vince Lombardi used to say, three things can go wrong when you pass the ball. You know, when you hand the ball off, only one thing. But when you pass the ball, you can or three things can happen, right? You can throw an interception, you can throw an incompletion, or you can get a reception. And his old school way is like, well, let's just hand the ball off. That's easier. I would say it's similar to setting screens. You know, a lot of things got to go right. Whereas in a space and play, I just go beat you, create an advantage, draw the help, kick, and now we're playing, right? So I think that's a good point.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about it is it's kind of made the game a little bit more predictable in the sense where, look, if you have the better players and you can break people down off the dribble and, you know, make decent reads and get to the rim, like, you have a chance. And so I honestly, if I am a team that is less talented and less skilled, I'll be honest, I go to more screening actions. I make the other team have to make decisions on the defensive end, and I spend more time in that. If I feel like I have the better players and I can create closeouts and win off the dribble and make good decisions there, then I spend less time on reading those screens and those actions. And I really think that a lot of people have just gone to something where they play in space with dribble drive, you know, something like that, where they just go. And again, not a bad decision, not a bad offense, but at the same time, I think it's harder to do that when you come up against the best teams you play, because you're just betting on your players being better in a lot of those scenarios. And that's not always the case.
Yeah. And I think you can also look around the corner and try to zig when other teams are zagging. And so that I was looking at that this offseason. It's like, man, I don't see a lot of people setting off ball screens. Let's go set more, because teams aren't used to guarding it. And so that was kind of, I think other coaches think like that or could think like that. Let's move on to the second action. Talk about back screens. Again, this is another one I'm a proponent of. Why? When you set a back screen, you're putting immediate pressure on the rim with that cutter. And that's one big reason I love it. I love it. Second reason, because similar to this whole conversation on screening, when you have two people screen, the defense has to talk. They have to make decisions. First off, getting them to talk is not easy, as all coaches listening, but then they got to make split second decisions. Again, not easy. You're putting them in a decision box, and I like that. And then if you get good shooters like a Steph Curry type, setting back screens, usually they don't want to leave. And so you get cutters open, or you're going to get a shooter wide open on the pop. So I love back screens. Where do you stand on them?
Yeah, I stand moderate. I mean, I think there's a couple of things that I like your point about shooters being back screeners. I do think that that puts a lot of pressure on the defense. You know, like, if you're going to check that screen and stay with it, shooters are going to pop and get good looks. I think that's a definite in using them. One of the reasons I don't like it, Sam, is I've found it harder over the years to get really good back screens. And here's the reason. I just think more and more teams are backing up and playing the percentages. And so where you're actually back screening that person is a lot closer to the rim, because people are just getting deeper into the help. And so, you know, against teams that pressure you, I think it's a great pressure release. I think it's a great way to get shooters open. I think it's a great way to get a mismatch. I just think there's some games where it's kind of null and void because the depth of the back screen, you know, it becomes more of a cross screen sometimes, because it's happening so deep. And so I do think some of that is how you are guarded, the effectiveness of that. And that's, you know, so love it from the sense of like a team that pressures you as a pressure release. I love it for shooters getting open on shots. I actually love it too, to get the ball into the elbow or to the post so that you can run action out of there, because it's an easy entry pass. And I'm moderate on how much I run it, because I just think a lot of teams are getting harder to back screen just because of the simple depth of the load to the ball on defense.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like two back screens. Well, first off, little shooter on big back screen. I love it in the middle third of the floor as well, where you have a little bit less help side potentially. And then, you know, also when you're setting a back screen on a guy who's just, or a girl who's just passed the ball, like somebody guarding the ball and then boom, you set it like that, that can be some, you can catch people by surprise too. And then another one is, you know, some people run read and react or motion, and instead of filling out, I think back screening your way out just adds another element of complexity for the defense to have to deal with.
Yeah, I agree with two things that you said there on back screens. I do like the middle third of the floor. I think it's more immediate pressure, and I think it's also a good way to get the ball on the elbow and play underneath the defense. I also like it in like a read and react scenario where it adds another complexity of communication and talk, and it's an easy way to take the corner from somebody. And so I really like that in that sense too. You know, like – let's just, another is like the skill of the five man, because I really like, you know, shooters screening bigs. But if you're back screening bigs that aren't being guarded out on the perimeter, that's where the angle gets tough. You know, if they're guarding them at the free throw line or below, and you're trying to back screen somebody from 10 feet away from the rim, it's just a little bit more difficult. Not that it can't be done. It's just a little bit more difficult to make effective. And so I think it does depend on how they guard you a little bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so we talked about flare screens, back screens. Before we
– let me add one more. I do like back screening the ball screener, you know, because they're in a they're in a unexpected position to get back screened, and you're helping that role. And, you know, a lot of times that just becomes a switch where you get a mismatch or a switch where you get a pop on the shooter. So that's one more place I like the back screen.
Like Spain action, yeah. Right, where you're coming off. Yeah. No, that's true. Any of that screen to screener where – again, screens just create confusion. And I feel like when I watch NBA or even get deep in the playoffs, like take a set sidestep here before we go to the next action we're going to talk about. But you know what I see, TJ? I just see continuous ball screens until they get the switch they want, right? So they're going to screen, they switch. Well, let me bring another guy to screen. And finally, until we get the five man on, you know, the point guard or the best play, like then it just is a one-on-one. And again, that's good offense when you have top 10 player in the world who can just go create an offense, right? It's not the most appeasing thing to watch on TV, but NBA coaches don't care what Sam or TJ think when we're watching TV. They just want to try to win the game, right? It's not about what the fans want. So now I say that an interesting stat analytically is since Steve Kerr has taken over as head coach of the Golden State Warriors, they've set the fewest amount of ball screens in the league. And he started zigging when, you know, others were zagging and sets a lot of, you know, off ball screens, all the split action, different things. So less ball screens. And he felt like when he took over, that's what they needed was to, space the floor. Now, Steve Kerr will also, like he did in the Sacramento series this year, he put the ball in Steph Curry's hand and did set more ball screens. So you got to always have that in your tool bag.
Yeah, I think one thing that's important to know is for the NBA, I've talked to NBA coaches about this before, why so much the ball screen. And they say, you know, look, when you get the ball over half court or whatever, you're down to 19, 18 seconds on the shot clock. You know, and being mindful of that, like they're just trying to create a mismatch or an advantage as quickly as they can, because you're only going to get two or three shots at it. And so that's why I think they default to the ball screen so much. And I understand that. However, I also agree with your point, Sam. If you look at teams that are making runs, and let's just say Golden State, for example, they set ball screens, but like they're in a lot of different screens. They're in a lot of back screen to handoffs. They're in a lot, you know, I mean, they're running a lot of action. Sacramento Kings, who made a big jump this year coming from Kerr's way of thinking, right? They set a lot of screens that aren't just ball screens. Golden State sets a lot of those screens. And I do think that the teams that win championships in the NBA, they do screen more. It's not, they still have ball screens in their repertoire, but they do screen more. And so they are harder to guard because they add more elements to it. And so I think that they're probably always going to ball screen the NBA just because of time on the shot clock. But I do think that the best teams in the NBA actually do screen off the ball pretty good.
Yeah. And that brings up a point. So I just did this, film study, TJ, on Chris Paul for our PGC YouTube channel. And it's an interesting look. Chris Paul is one of the highest ball screen usage guys in the league. And he's going to a team that doesn't set a ton of ball screens. But I think it'll be a nice curveball, you know, if Chris Paul is especially running that second unit and they might go to a little bit more ball screen action. I think that's a nice little curveball for the second unit to run. And, when I was studying this, you know, the two teams that set fewer ball screens this past year than than Golden State? Do you know off the top by chance?
I don't.
So it's Sacramento and Denver. Now, what's interesting about those two? Sacramento, well, first they're coached by Mike Brown, who was an assistant for the Warriors. But both those teams, which might lead, is going to lead into a little bit of our next action, they run their offense through their five men. Sabonis and Jokic are up top doing a lot of handoffs and facilitating offense. And then Draymond Green does a lot of that with the Warriors. So it's that's the evolution of our game that's so interesting to look at.
Yeah, and those are the two examples I use without even knowing the numbers. Just watching them with a general eye, there's just less ball screens, less isolation play, more action. So the whole all five players are incorporated, and they're just tougher to guard. And it's been interesting to watch, even in the preseason, Golden State a little bit, all the things they're doing with Chris Paul. And, you know, they're running him off back screens into the short corner for a post touches and letting him facilitate as a point guard out of 10 feet away. Like, very creative. And I do think the best teams in the NBA are creative rather than just kind of vanilla and think, well, my player is better than your player. And I think we've seen that fail. I think we've seen that fail a lot where, you know, we've watched – LeBron go ISO and ball screens or just general ISO or whatever. And, you know, and he's also been good when him and Dwayne Wade took turns using the ball screen, they were very average. When they learned to play off of each other and a little bit more action, they were much better. I think that's probably true of any team. You got a lot of stuff to guard.
Yeah. So let's go into this third action we're going to talk about, which is, you know, two man like chase or get action where you think Jokic and Murray, where you're throwing it and they flip it. So I mean, let's just say Murray's throwing it to Jokic and then he might be sprinting coming off a handoff, or he might fake a handoff and he turns a corner. But this two-man game chase action, what are your thoughts on it?
I think it's good. I think it's hard, especially when you put a guy on an island with decisions to make. I mean, we're trying to do that a lot with our best player this year, is put him into a situation where he's on the wing isolated by himself and he can backdoor, he can come for the handoff, he can go. I think you can even take that to another level. I listened to one of the Pacers coaches talk about this. They call it smash action, which is basically, yeah, I'm on an island by myself and I could backdoor, I could go for the handoff, I could catch and shoot, I could do whatever. And if I use one action and it's not successful, then we turn and we rescreen it with a ball screen or something so that you immediately make them guard another action. And I think that's effective too, because you're constantly just, you're moving somebody from, you know, a handoff to a ball screen. You're moving somebody from a backdoor to a handoff. You're moving somebody and you're just comboing the actions. And, you know, as we talked about this and in our offensive track, a counter move actions, Rick talked about CMAs and just really having the ability, because the best teams you're going to play, if you just have one action and the play is dead, most teams are going to be able to guard you that are good at that. And so you have to be able to counter a lot of those actions and you have to be able to combo actions. I think those are the hardest teams to guard as well. Teams that combo actions, you know, not just, okay, we run a flare screen and it was open for a shot or it wasn't open for a shot. Well, what's next? You know, are we running into a cross screen? Are we down screening off the flare? Are we, what are we doing off of that first action? Because, you know, so many teams, the best teams you play are going to be able to guard your first action. It's really hard for any good defensive team to guard the second and third action. And I think coaches need to pay attention to what are my second and third actions off the first action.
Yeah. And the science and the art play in here. So the science is the action. We talked about flare screen, back screen, you know, two-man chase. Like, you teach the what, but then the art and the specialness is, well, I'd say actually the art and the is like who you have running it. So the better the players, no doubt. I mean, Jokic and Murray, it works well because they're elite, but their styles really collaborate well with one another. The puzzle pieces fit well. Whereas you think about a Jason Tatum and a Jaylen Brown, what two-man action could you put them in that would be effective? They're two wings. You know, they play the same position. So, like, that's a tougher thing. But I think as a coach, like, you're thinking about what's hard to guard, and then you want to try to, you know, model that within the personnel of your team. So when you're talking – let's go back to your situation with your best player – are you running this with, like, who's his Batman and Robin here? Who's the teammate he's running it with?
Yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, similar to the Denver Nuggets, if you watch their game, sometimes they play with two bigs on the floor, and sometimes it's Jokic who kind of serves like, you know, the four man where the other big is down low. And so we really like to have two options. I mean, we really like to run a lot of his get action and decision making with a big, but we also like to run it with another playmaker. So we run it with our four and our five, where, you know, a four is a little bit more of he can pop and shoot, because that adds a whole nother element to it, right? You start popping off that ball screen and their particular coverage is one that says two to the ball, you're going to get some wide open looks. And so I think anytime that you can put your best player in action with multiple different people, it gives you, if their skill set is different, it gives you a whole bunch of different options. And I think if you have the opportunity to run that same get action or isolation action where you put a defender on an island, then I think it's great when you can run it with multiple players. And so, I, you know, look, I, and you made a point earlier saying that I think it's a really good one. Like, what's the hardest action for you to guard? You know, like, I think that's always driven a lot of my offensive philosophy, is when we break down teams and film, like when I'm having trouble staying up trying to figure out how to guard their stuff, then I think to myself, I want that action in my offense.
Yeah. And I think, so to build on that, I think about that sometimes. I don't really play pickup ball anymore, but if we were going out and playing pickup ball, like we would run some stuff where I'm throwing it. Like, it's really, think about this. Just put your player hat on. You're guarding me near the top of the key, and my teammate, you know, is, you know, offset lane line, and I throw it like a horns action type thing. You're guarding me, right? And I throw that thing, and then boom, I just sprint after my pass. Like, that's hard for you to guard. You got to sprint with me. I can run you into the screen, get the handoff, or I can stop on a dime, redirect back door, like, it's just not easy to guard, in my opinion, when you're putting that player, they're running blind. The defender's running blind. They got to look over their shoulder. You hope the guy with the handoff is communicating it. I just think it's really hard to guard because of that type of, you know, the stress you put on the defender.
Yeah. And I think a practical way for coaches to get better at this is small-sided games. I think this really helps be more creative as a player, and also for players to learn each other. But let's just say you put the ball at the top slot up there and a post player in the elbow, pass to the wing, back screen, and play out of it. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I'm not going to tell you what to do. Use all of your options. And this is kind of where we got better when we were growing up in pickup ball. We just played like this a little bit. And I think right now we just have lost a little bit of that creativity. Going back to what we were talking about before, is just kind of space the floor and beat them off the dribble. But if you put that player in the high post and you back screen somebody for an easy entry to the pass there, and then when you throw it to the high post, you know, all of a sudden that guy can backdoor, come off of a handoff, go. There's so many different options that you can do that, you know, the post can ISO and play off that. You can even have the cutter cut to the same side. Now you got a three-man game on one side. You can make a three-man game or a two-man game. They can go into split action. They can go into zoom action. They can go into – there's so many different things they can go into. But to me, that is hard to guard. Get the ball into the mid to low post, get it on the porch down there, get it in the high post, and then run a bunch of, you know, backdoor, split action, zoom action, whatever. And then you get those players good at choosing, making the right decisions. You don't know what's coming. They don't know what's coming. And the defense is in a really tough situation, because if they're not communicating and working, you're going to get some good looks. And you can simply do that just by putting them in small-sided games. You're going to make better players and just running that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the Nuggets were really good at that. What they would do is they put Murray down in the mid block. They would back screen. Jokic would have the ball in the opposite extended elbow. They'd back screen, let's say, Gordon going at the rim. Are you going to switch that? Okay, fine. You're going to switch that? Well, Gordon's going to have a post-up mismatch. And I know coaches may be listening like, wait, you're talking about elite players. Yeah, I know we are, but hang tight. So you back screen, then Murray's sprinting off that handoff with a 1-5 handoff, and it's you know, it's hard. Like, if you switch, you're an immediate mismatch. But it all started because of these actions we're talking about that create the advantage.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on this?
No, I really like the back screen to start it, though. right? Because it's not even like you're trying to score off of it. You're just creating decisions for the other team. And now you get to the get or give action, to the handoff, to the three. Well, you get to all of that. I mean, I broke down a lot of that film too, watching the Nuggets. And I think it's just really good action. It frees up the movement of the ball too. Like going back to your previous one, the back screen, it's not even just for a layup or a score. It just frees up the movement of the ball, which puts the defense in a little bit more of a bind.
Yeah. And one of my final thoughts on this is like, we could turn on the TV and watch a game and we could watch this happen. A team come down, set a ball screen, pick and roll, dunk, layup. Next time down to team come down, run back screen, zoom, all this false action on the weak side, and they're going to score. And then you watch another team. Like, that's the beauty of basketball. Like, there's a lot of different ways to slice it and cut it and be successful. And, you know, you got to know your personnel well and think about what's hard to guard and then build out your offense accordingly.
Yeah, my final thought would be this. Like, if you are good enough, and our friend Lenny Acuff, remember when he said this, this quote's never left me. If you're good enough to be a fastball in a fastball league and you feel like you can just win the league by just, you know, spacing the floor and beating people off the dribble and doing whatever, or throwing it down to the block and just banging out or whatever, you know, well, good. I mean, good for you. Like, you can play that way and it can be simple. If you're not good enough to beat the best teams you play, then I would consider looking into running a lot of this action. That's where I think the back screen into the combo action gets a little bit, you know, difficult and more hard to guard. And I think you do have to invest the time on the offensive end to be successful of running the screens and the timing of the screens and screen the screener and CMAs and all of that kind of stuff. So I would start there as a coach. I would ask myself, are we good enough to line up and beat people off the dribble and attack closeouts really well and, you know, make shots and whatever? Or are the best teams we're going to play going to be able to contain us in that way? And now you're going to have to go to more complex actions. But that's where I'd spend my time that gives you a chance to win, is when you make a team have to guard complex action.
Yeah. And thinking about with the end in mind, because if you think about how the Rockets were built for years with James Harden and putting up video game numbers, was that a recipe to be successful in the playoffs deep in the season? You know, Kobe even talked about it. He's like, he didn't think it was, because it was easy to scout and easier to guard. So I think coaches, as you're building out your offense, it may work for 5 of the 10 teams in your league, but will it work against the best defenses? I think that's something you got to consider as well. So, hey, coaches, players, everybody listening, thanks so much. Hopefully you got better on offense today. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe to our channel. Give us a like button, comment, give us feedback on this. We love hearing from you. That is TJ. I am Sam. We are the Hardwood Hustle.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Hardwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. We also want to make sure you know about our coaching resources and freebies available to you at pgchustle.com. We have a workshop, a Read and React masterclass, and effective practice planning tips to help you enhance your coaching. Get started at pgchustle.com. From the Hardwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.